Loud explosions have been heard in the Syrian capital, Damascus. Syrian media has reported that Israeli warplanes have carried out attacks across the country. Israel says it is acting to stop chemical weapons falling into the hands of extremists. These attacks come just 48 hours after the regime of dictator Bashar al-Assad fell to rebel groups on Sunday. He and his father ran murderous regimes since 1971. Forces led by the Islamist opposition group Hayat Tahrir al-Sham, or HTS, entered Damascus on Sunday morning before appearing on state television to declare that Syria is now free. Its leaders said that they will publish a list of the most senior officials involved in torturing the Syrian people and will offer rewards in exchange for information on people involved in war crimes. What happens next and who will govern Syria and how are the big questions facing the country now. There are many rebel groups spread across the country. Will they come together or will they fight each other for power? And the US Secretary of State Anthony Blinken has warned that the Islamic terror group ISIS might also take advantage of Assad's downfall.
The end of this regime is a defeat for all who enabled its barbarity and its corruption, none more than Iran, Hezbollah, and Russia. So this moment presents a historic opportunity, but it also carries considerable risks. History shows how quickly moments of promise can descend into conflict and violence. ISIS will try to use this period to reestablish its capabilities, to create safe havens. As our precision strikes over the weekend demonstrate, we are determined not to let that happen.
That's Anthony Blinken there. Now, you might have heard the name across news bulletins and media coverage all day yesterday, Saidnaya. It is Syria's most secretive and notorious prison. It was built in the early 1980s in a small town about 30 kilometres north of the capital, Damascus. And Saidnaya is where the Assad family held opponents of their regime for more than 40 years. Referred to as a human slaughterhouse by human rights groups, thousands of people are said to have been detained, tortured and executed at the prison since the Syrian civil war began in 2011. One of those prisoners was our next guest, Omar Al-Shogre, who is now the Director for Detainee Affairs at the Syrian Emergency Task Force. And he joins us this morning from Sweden, where he's based. Omar, thank you very much for taking our call and you're welcome to Morning Ireland. Could you tell us how you ended up in this prison?
Firstly, congratulations to Syria. To Syria for bringing dictator down after 14 years of fight, of fighting alone, of struggling alone, being tortured alone with the silence of the world. I'm very happy. It's a beautiful moment. And the reason I happened in Saidnaya doesn't exist. There is no reason. In Syria, the intelligence services doesn't need a reason to take you to prison and torture you. And under torture, they force you to give a false confession. When you give a false confession, you get sentenced based on that confession. And you cannot choose any false confession yourself because it's torture that determines. It's painful. It's miserable. And just you want the pain to stop. So you give the officer anything he wants you to say. And then you give the false confessions, you get sentenced, and I was sentenced to execution. And it took 3 years of being transferred to different prisons, and the last year was in Saidnaya prison. And I can tell you, they all are very horrible. Horrible in the sound of screams of prisoners on a daily basis, nightly basis, all the time. There is pain and suffering, but nothing is like Saidnaya prison. Saidnaya prison is the darkest among all, the scariest among all, and it's the worst place on this earth. And however, I am the luckiest man on this planet since I have the mother that nobody has. She is powerful, strong, amazing, and beautiful. So my mom managed to smuggle me out on my day of execution.
Now, how did she do that?
My mom has managed to communicate with people and bribe people from the top to the bottom, including the execution guards, to mock execute me instead. So I was not actually executed. They shot, but they shot next to me. And then I was some transportation was arranged until I made it out of the country to my mother.
That is extraordinary. Did I read you saying, Omar, that at various stages during your experience in Saidnaya, to die would have been a release from the torture, from the pain that you experienced and witnessed in there?
Without a doubt, the level of pain, physical and mental, they put you through so extreme. However, there is more important thing than that. There is the starvation. You are on a level of starvation that are extraordinary. You can't believe how your brain functions under those circumstances. Imagine that they give you a lot of food and the food is in your hand, but you're not allowed to eat. If you eat, you get executed. It's not the lack of food, it's the lack of our ability to eat it because we're not allowed to by the guard. And more than that, I can tell you for hours, well, actually I can tell you for 3 years about the pain and the struggle and the starvation we went through, but there is no point. The regime has fallen.
How did you cope? How did you maintain the mental strength, never mind the physical strength, but the mental strength to survive in there?
Well, firstly, your body is capable of adjusting to pain. So you physically, you get adjusted to it over time or you die. There is no alternative solution. You get adjusted to it or you die. Mentally, it's very interesting to discover the Syrian cells because you don't sit in your cell on your own. You sit with other prisoners. Those prisoners, none of them is a criminal. All of them are the top people of your country. So on my right, the cellmate is a doctor. On my left, psychologist. In front of me is a lawyer. Behind me is teacher. To the corner is an engineer. And the doctor is talking to me about how to take care of my wound so I don't die from infection. And the psychologist, how to treat your trauma so you don't die because of it. And the teacher, how to improve your grammar. And the engineer, how messed up this building is. Suddenly you realize that you are sitting in the most educational environment that your country can provide. And while the prison environment itself is miserable environment, the circle of prisoners around you is the most safe environment you could ever be in and the most educational environment because we trusted each other. We fought for each other. We protected each other on a daily basis. And that's something actually I can't say about the world. I can't say about democracies around the world because democracies around the world, all of them have failed us. Let us die in 14 years, 14 years of bombardment, chemical weapons, starvation, death. The world did nothing. But those people around me in the cell, they did everything to save my life. So I'm alive thanks to them.
Were you forced to carry the bodies of some of your fellow prisoners who had been executed?
Many endless times. Most importantly, I was forced to number the dead bodies. So everybody who dies need to get registered and to get numbered. Just go back in time to the Holocaust time when they numbered every single prisoner. Same thing. We had to do the same thing for our cellmates, the dead and the ones that are alive about to die. So carrying the dead bodies is horrible in the beginning, but then you get used to it because that's the thing that you see the most, dead people. There's nothing else you see more than dead people in that place.
What were your thoughts, your feelings, Omar, watching the prisoners leave Saidnaya over the last few days?
I have cried like a little baby endlessly for so many hours of joy. Those prisoners deserve our tears of joy because I understand their pain. Those people lost hope. I lost hope when I was in my cell. I never believed the world cares enough to get me out. And the world actually didn't care enough for those people. It's their own people that cared for them and came and fought to liberate them. So that moment is unbelievably joyful. This is the day that I will remember the most in my life. I will tell it to my children and my grandchildren, and they will tell it to their children.
How are you feeling now about the future for Syria? What is your main feeling? Is it joy? Is it relief? Are you a little scared about what's to come next?
I am not scared. It's a feeling of joy and excitement because I believe in my people. I believe in the Syrian people. They fought for 14 years to bring down a dictator. They will never allow another dictator to come in power. So I'm very excited about the day when I go and vote for the first time in my life in my country without the intelligence services having their gun over my head. This is going to be the most beautiful day and the day of celebration.
Do you believe that HTS, are you confident that they will have free and fair elections?
I'm not confident in any group. I'm confident in my people. That's what I care about. I'm confident that my people would not let anyone take this win from them, the win of bringing down a dictator. That's the most important thing. Any group who wants to come, whether they're good or bad, doesn't matter. I'm telling you, the Syrian people will not settle for less than what they asked for in 2011, freedom and democracy. They will not, I assure you.
And what about Assad and justice? Do you hope, do you believe that he will face justice for the crimes that he committed?
I believe that both Assad and his heads of intelligence services that were responsible for the torture and starvation have nowhere to go. They will be prosecuted for their crimes. And even though Assad is in Russia now, we will grab him at some point and we'll bring him to court to show him that the Syrian people can be broken. And it's very important because we have a million people who were killed in Syria in the last 14 years, a million. And you have over a million that's been tortured in Assad prisons. Those people, especially the mothers that now all the prisons are liberated, but they don't find their kids because they're dead. Those would like definitely to have justice and to see Assad in prison.
Do you have any plans to return to Syria?
Syria is so beautiful. If I could tell you about my hometown, it would take me a few days about how beautiful it is. Even though they burned it down, we can replant everything. We can rebuild everything. It's so beautiful. And my grandma is there. And she always tells me on the phone that she doesn't want to die before she sees me. So I'm going to rush as much as I can so she sees me. Because, you know, I love my hometown. And to be honest with you, I also love my life in Sweden. I've been here for such a long time. I have established a life that I love and I care about. So I have two homes to care about, two places to build.
Omar, it's a real privilege to speak to you this morning. Thank you for taking our call and joining us here on Morning Ireland. Omar Al-Shogray there, who is now the Director for Detainee Affairs at the Syrian Emergency Task Force and a former prisoner at Syria's most notorious prison, Saidnaya.